Johnny Mac with your daily comedy news, CBR.com. I spoke to Bill Burr about George Carlin. They asked Burr, do you remember the first Carlin stand-up routine that really caught your attention when you were younger? Can I answer? I think for me it was Stuff. We had HBO back in Queens before you could have proper cable TV, and I think I used to watch Carlin specials. I also remember buying a couple Carlin albums on cassettes. Remember, I forget which record chain it was, but there'd be something called The Nice Price, and there'd be like this big bucket of cassettes that you could buy, and I had a couple Carlin albums back in the day. I probably still have them over in the basement if I dig it deep enough. Anyway, Bill Burr's answer, I bought a comedy album called Toledo Window Box, which was some sort of slang for weed. I just remember I loved his voice and the way he used it, the rise and fall of it. Carlin had this really great broadcaster voice and he knew how to use it. I don't really remember the bits. I just remember him being hilarious. And the albums back then just sounded so live. You could almost picture the crowd and the venue and the stuff. It was amazing. CBR opined, good word, Johnny Mac, if there's anyone in the history of comedy who is as impactful as Carlin, Burr cut him off and said, and Lenny Bruce and Red Fox. Oh, this article spelled red wrong. There's two D's in red and two X's in Fox, guys. Come on. This looks so funny. I'm just looking at the print. Red Fox, you know, like a fox that's red. I digress. And Lenny Bruce and Red Fox, which led to Richard Pryor. Yeah, there's a lot, but Carlin's part of that. He's on the Mount Rushmore. Who's on the... that's a good question. Maybe I'll post that on the Facebook group. Who is on the Mount Rushmore of comedy? Carlin, Pryor, and two more. I got to think about that. CBR said, what do you think comedians picked up the most from Carlin's work? Burr, from him and someone like Joan Rivers, I think it's how prolific they were. And hey, you know, there was a stereotype for a while that comedians dry up after a couple years. He didn't. George Carlin and Joan Rivers were just, they were fearless. But George and Joan were talking about stuff that even today, I still wouldn't have the guts to alienate a crowd of that level. I could tick off a certain group, but that takes a lot of guts. Ricky Gervais spoke to the Wall Street Journal about critical thinkers. If it's a subject that's personal to them, they can't see the wood for the trees. They can't see objectively. People laugh at 19 of terrible subjects I joke about, but not the 20th, because it affects them. The Wall Street Journal was interested that Ricky Gervais is vegan. Ricky said, I've been nearly vegan for years. I haven't eaten meat and eggs for years. The last one to go is dairy. We're 100% vegan in the house, but I did lapse every now and then, but I'm desperately trying to be vegan now. But you know what? I don't want to preach about it, because when I was a vegetarian, I saw people on Twitter making other people who were trying to feel bad. For me, it's not about being 100% vegan. One, it's about being better than you were yesterday. It's about education. And everything's going to be vegan soon. It's going that way. Also, I've got a cat, so I'm not vegan because I've still got to buy into the meat market. It's a dangerous thing to be that smug about being a vegan because veganism isn't about food. It's about harm. He was asked about award shows, specifically the Golden Globes. Now, I've been sleeping this article for quite some time. This was actually an interview from before the slap, so that's why Ricky doesn't talk about the Oscars here. Holiday filler, Johnny Mac? Yeah, a little bit. Ricky said, I don't watch award shows anyway. I never have. The only time I've ever seen an award show was one that I'm at. I'm either winning or losing an award or presenting it. They're fun for the industry, you know? The first time I hosted the Globes, I did it 5 times over 10 years. It was palpable. People are going, who does he think he is? How dare he insult the most important people in the world? Over that 10-year period, the world changed. The last time I did it, it was very different. I kept doing my thing, and now people are going, yeah, give it to them. We hate celebrities. We're tired of being told what to do by people with everything. We're tired of being told to recycle when we know they've got their private jet or limo. OfficeLitHub.com, adapted from the new book, The Office BFFs, Tales of the Office from two best friends who were there. Angela, who plays Angela, told a story. Can our director ask some of the supporting cast to help fill out background of scenes by doing busy work in various parts of the bullpen? If you rewatch the pilot, you'll see a few of these moments. Kevin is going through packages at the mail cart. I make copies of the photocopier, and then there were people crossing behind the interviews in the conference room. The writers call the interviews between Dunder Mifflin employees and the documentarians talking heads. Ken was establishing the world of the mockumentary, and in those early days, they wanted people crossing behind the talking heads to show the hustle and bustle of an office. He asked me if I'd make a big loop through the bullpen, passing out papers. I was thrilled to have something to do. I asked him what he wanted me to give out. He told me it didn't matter. Clearly, not a plot-propelling moment. Earlier, when at my desk, I had doodled a little cat on a post-it note. This gave me an idea. I made a bunch more, and I wrote on each one, it's Sprinkle's 3rd birthday, come celebrate Tuesday in the parking lot. I had the idea that Angela found a cat in the parking lot and adopted it. Its 3rd birthday was coming up, and she was going to make sure everybody acknowledged it properly. While filming my pivotal background walk behind the talking heads, I handed out the invitations. Everyone in the office received one, except Jim. I decided that Jim would probably say something sarcastic about the cat party, and Angela was not having it. Sprinkle's birthday was very important to her, and she wasn't going to invite just anyone, especially not a smart aleck, so Jim was out. Jenna Fisher, who played Pam, said, "When Angela gave me my invitation, I thought it was hilarious. I stuck it to my computer screen, as folks in offices do with random sticky notes. A few days later, I had to shoot a flirty scene between Jim and Pam at the reception desk. After a few takes, Ken came over and said the scene felt a little stiff and he wanted us to improvise. He reminded us of an improvisation we'd done during the audition process where they had me stand at the copier and directed John to walk over and start a conversation. Krasinski came up to me and said, 'What are you copying right now? What is that?' And I responded with a flirty sass, 'I'm working. I don't know if you're working, but I have work to do.' The dialogue we came up with wasn't very clever, but underneath those boring words, we played out a subtext of two people who were delighted to be standing close and saying anything to each other. Ken suggested we try improvising in a similar way, telling us to talk about any mundane thing while the cameras rolled. And so when the scene started, I saw the post-it note on my computer. It gave me the idea to say the line, 'Are you going to Angela's cat party on Sunday?' I'm not sure why I said Sunday when the post-it clearly said the party's on Tuesday. As Angela predicted, John as Jim shot back, 'Yes, stop. That's ridiculous.' And we giggled together. It was a great moment and it made the cut. Not only that, but the exchange planted the seed that Angela was a crazy cat lady. The writers went on to flesh out the story of Sprinkles for many seasons thereafter. Great story. Hey, David Spade, how do you feel about where comedy is going?" That's a question from The Hollywood Reporter. Spade said, "I respect Chappelle, and I respect most comedians. I think we're all friends until proven otherwise. It's a nice little community, and if you like comedy and you go to comedy clubs, there's people saying crap you wouldn't believe, but they're not famous enough to get canceled. So in a way, that's your competition. You're watching someone better than you because they're doing crap you should be doing, and so it's a very tough juggling act. I just try to be clever. I try to surprise in my jokes, and I give an hour of fun without being too heavy, and no one needs to break into discussion groups after my special. A lot of people don't even know I do stand up. I'm always in a movie or in a TV show." Let's stop off at Gossip Corner. Us Magazine talked about Pete Davidson. Their source says, "Everyone in Kim Kardashian's family absolutely adores Pete, and Pete loves Kim. He fits in so well with her life and with her family. Kim and Pete are even happier now that they can attend events together and be in public. They love spending as much time together as possible." And from the San Francisco Chronicle, scientist-turned-comedian Ginny Hogan draws infinite laughs out of an endless series of bad dates. Johnny Mac, this sounds like holiday weekend filler. Is this holiday weekend filler, Johnny Mac? Ginny Hogan says, "I'm more dateable than a plate of refried beans and other romantic observations." That is her book. It narrates life as a single, undefined partner, then a single again. Ginny Hogan, why did you turn to comedy? Ginny said, "I worked at Facebook briefly and then at two tech startups in San Fran. At my last tech job, I had a month lull where it wasn't clear what I was supposed to be working on, so I signed up for a stand-up comedy class. I wasn't even a big fan of stand-up at first, but the improv class started too late in the evening. I got fully addicted to stand-up in a month, even a week, honestly. I started doing it every night. In 2017, I quit the tech job. I started freelancing and never went back to tech. In stand-up, there was a big emphasis on making your jokes as short as possible. I studied math and I was a programmer. It was so cool. I would have jokes that felt like I'd written out lines of code. In programming, you'll sometimes refactor your code, where if the same thing is repeated, you take it out and make it a separate function. I would do that with my jokes." Then they asked her about dating in San Francisco versus dating in LA versus New York. Okay, her answer: "San Francisco is one of the best places to date as a straight woman. It has a lot of men, and there's something about it. I think because people are very professionally motivated, people are more serious about looking for a relationship. LA is a hard city to date because it's so spread out. My first few months in LA, I dated someone I was pretty lukewarm toward because he lived nearby. Everyone was like, 'Don't break up with him. You're never going to find somebody within walking distance.' As for New York, I don't think of New York as an excellent dating city." She did not elaborate. And that's your comedy news for today. Follow the show for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.